In this episode of the Reinvent podcast, I chat with a longtime friend, Masasa Mbangeni. She's a two-time SAFTA nominee and a household name when it comes to South African television. We chat about how far she's grown as a person, as well as the personal and professional sacrifices she's had to make to find true happiness. She speaks about managing her emotional and mental energy and ridding toxicity from her life. I hope you take as much inspiration from this episode as I did.
So I think what was really good for me is that I'd started practicing transcendental meditation about 2 years ago when I started my health journey with you, maybe around the same time.
Yes.
And I've been finding that mindfulness has been helping me a great, great deal. Making sure that I create, or rather continue on the schedule of mindfulness. So making sure I get my 20 minutes in the morning and 20 minutes in the evening, and doing yoga and seriously dedicating and carving out time for that. Because I have a natural propensity to be anxious, and I have to, in order to manage that anxiety, creating a schedule for myself, a haphazard one, but a schedule nonetheless, has helped
structure.
Me structure. Yeah. Has helped me manage it as much as I can, because I think what the one thing that we all need to be very cognizant of is that we don't know what's coming. So all we can control is ourselves and our internal space and our internal peace. And I know that sounds esoteric, but that's exactly how I'm managing. It's just going, you know what? I don't know if the world markets are going to crash tomorrow and result in the world's greatest depression ever. I don't know if, you know, anyone's going to be employed after this. I don't know whether, you know, my industry is still going to exist in the way that it existed before all of this time and before the virus came into everyone's lives. But what I do know is that if I wake up tomorrow morning and I do 20 minutes, I can control that. And so that's enough for me. So that's how I'm managing. Yeah.
Sure. That's brilliant. You know, I think that is the lesson, whether we are in a lockdown, as we are sitting in Johannesburg on the 1st of April, ironically April Fool's Day. And
the jokes on us.
Being forced into this situation where we've got to relinquish control and sit with the discomfort, but it's a life lesson, and it is going to irrevocably change the way we do life and see the world from this point forward. But I think it was necessary. And, you know, those are such words of wisdom, to simply create structure and manage what you can control. What's interesting for me as well is how many people suffer from anxiety, but never spoke about it until now. And I think we all, especially in South Africa, live with this underlying level of anxiety about what is tomorrow going to bring. And the truth is, none of us really know.
Yeah, I don't even think it's a South African worldview. I think it's a worldview. Mm. I think everyone, you know, there's a complete rebirth. You know, you watch the news, CNN, America, it seems like they've been pretending to be on top of things, but it looks like they've been anxious just as much as we are. And I think this virus is dissolving borders, and we're realizing that we're all humans and we're all trying to figure it out, irrespective of where you came to be in this form on this world. It doesn't matter right now. Like, right now, all of us are in a state of anxiety, and we're realizing that all of us have been. You know, the human experience is a tough and challenging and interesting and anxiety-inducing one, whether you're sitting in the mountains in the Himalayas, or whether you write down on the bottom of the earth in Oz or Antarctica. You know, we all share in this human experience, and part of it is that anxiety and how to manage that.
So if we step back, 2 years? Actually, it's 3 years, I think, since we started working together, and you were going through a huge turmoil, personal turmoil. You had left Scandal. You'd left the series that had sort of entrenched you into the South African mindset. I would love to just go back a little bit and look at it from the perspective of where you stand today and the decisions you made, because you made some big life-changing decisions back then that ultimately led you to where you are today and the success. You know, when I say success, yes, career success, but success as a peaceful human being. Although things were so hard for you back then. And I remember the first time you came into my office and you were exhausted. You know, and when we look now, is the choices you made back then, as hard as they were, have led you to become the person you are today. Let's chat about that for a bit.
So I had finished varsity. I studied a drama degree at Wits University, and I had finished varsity and went straight into Scandal. And a brilliant opportunity. And I spent maybe about 4 years there. And then one day I woke up and I was just tired. And it wasn't out of, resentment for work or tired of my colleagues. It was just my soul deeply yearning for adventure. And so I jumped. I left Scandal. And I didn't realize that this was going to also usher in the time of my health really going into fritz. I remember coming to your office and you telling me that, listen, you have burnout, and, you know, doing blood tests and realizing, you know, my body was completely shut down. And I guess because I'd never given myself the time to rest, to reflect on, you know, personal challenges that I was facing, I think everything came to a point, and it was a lot. And my body was just like, if I do not collapse right now, and force you into this position, then you'll carry on, then it will be too late for healing, for resetting. And so that's where our journey began, which was incredibly difficult because, you know, I thought I was doing the right thing, but I didn't realize, I wasn't quite conscious of the mind-body connect and how, you know, psychosomatic I was, and how the turmoil that was happening in my mind was now playing itself out and wreaking havoc in my body. I mean, I remember you telling me, like, my blood results and, you know, my testosterone levels being out, you know, stress hormones are rising. I'd had non-existent vitamin D. And I guess it made sense because most of my days were spent in studio under artificial light. So working, you know, I'd wake up early in the morning, drive to set, only leave at night. So never ever making contact with the sun, never taking a walk. I did exercise, it would be quickly before I went to work. You know, and putting the body, when you're an actor, the body doesn't really know the difference sometimes. And this is why in acting, in actor training, we talk about stepping into character and stepping out. And very often we don't step out. So your body still thinks that it's still in this fight or flight mode of performance, when in actual fact you're at home chilling, having tea. And so I hadn't, because I hadn't created boundaries in my work life and in my personal life, the two started to spill into each other. So there were moments where I wasn't sure where art is imitating life or whether life is imitating art. And that really caused a lot of turmoil and drama in my life, and caused a lot of loss and a lot of pain. But through walking that journey, and there's a famous story in all sorts of, you know, Western literature, or most literature, even Eastern literature, about the hero's journey, where you embark on the adventure and, you know, there's a crisis and there's a death and there's a rebirth. And I feel like that's what happened to me, not just on a physical level, but on a spiritual level, on an emotional level, that led to a lot of breakthroughs, which is why, you know, when you're faced with what we're facing as a country, as a world right now, our mindset is so important. This, how you choose to view things, can be the difference between this being a breakthrough or this being a death. And unfortunately, as the nature of life is that things must die in order for things to grow. And maybe, you know, if we look at this as an opportunity for our egos to die, an opportunity for us to reimagine a life. I mean, you and I are having this conversation and we're not sitting next to each other. That is disruptive. That is creative. That is what crisis gives birth to if you allow the opportunity for it to do so. So I guess, you know, I'm hoping that people who do get an opportunity to listen to our conversation really take this as an opportunity or a challenge to maybe shift the way that we've been doing life. Maybe this is a way in a very esoteric, you know, age of the Aquarius thinging way of going, let's reimagine a world and let's allow this virus to disrupt and allow us to be creative and see what comes out. Yes. It might be, and I'm talking from my experience, which is why I think I'm grateful for all of those difficulties that I faced from 3 years ago, because it taught me to be resilient. It taught me that I'll always be okay. It taught me to sit in difficulty. And sometimes that difficulty means losing everything. It taught me to sit in that and go, okay, I don't have a clue what I'm going to do, what is it, but it's okay. I'm going to deal with today and now. And by making those little choices daily, you reach, you know, I climbed Kilimanjaro in 2015. And I'll never forget how my guide used to always say to me, pole, pole. And it means slowly, slowly. Take one foot in front of the other. And you don't look at that mountain and go, whoo, I'm going to be on the top. But you see it and it's overwhelming and it's just majestic being. And then if you just every day just go, pole, pole, I'm just going to take one foot in front of the other. And anyone who's tried to summit that mountain knows on summit night, you're exhausted, you're tired, you can't see anything. It's really like life. And all you can see is the guide in front of you, and all you can hear are maybe the footsteps of the people following behind you and your own breath and your own heartbeat. And maybe that's what we need to be doing right now, is just polo poloing. And because I learned those lessons 3 years ago, I don't say that this is being a breeze, but every day I'm reminding myself, just take it slowly, slowly, bit by bit, pole, pole. And even this mountain will be summited. Maybe it'll take 3 months. Maybe it'll take 18 months, but even this mountain will be summited and you'll get to the top. And as the late great Mandela said, when you get to the top of a mountain, you realize there's still many more mountains to climb. So you become an experienced mountaineer of life.
I've been watching, and I watch you, I watch a lot of my clients go through this journey, because I can't do it for you. All I can do is hopefully walk next to you and help in any way possible, is to stand back and see how strength in the human spirit develops if you really make a decision to see things differently. And I think you're a shining example of, if life can't carry on the way it's been before and I have to make the tough decisions and do what I need to do for me. You pulled out of you know, your career. You went into teaching, which came up with a whole lot of other challenges for you. Can we, you know, teaching is really difficult, and what students throw at you can really set you in a spin and question your own mind a lot of the time. I remember there was an interview, I think it was the True Love interview, or one of the Sunday Times interviews, and you were talking about how your students challenged you. What was that about?
Oh gosh, I'm so grateful for that. I, you know, even when I see some of them, you know, obviously before lockdown and social distancing, you know, even when I see some of them, I'm grateful for that gift, because you know, it was a lesson. You go in there thinking that I'm going to teach and I'm going to impart this knowledge. And in the end, it turned out to be this symbiotic relationship, you know. So it turned, my students turned to be this big mirror, reflecting back to me my own insecurities and fears and anxieties and joys. And I think similarly to you, I couldn't do the work for my students, but I the reward came when I saw a student get it. When I saw a student that I was struggling with, that wouldn't get notes, or struggling and having difficult times with. But that moment when you see a star being born, or you see an aha moment and someone looks at you and there's a twinkle in their eye of going, oh, I get it. This is what you meant. I would go through all of the difficulty all over again just to see that, because that is how delicious and satisfying that moment is. So going into teaching was really a moment that I thought would take in and, you know, heal myself. And it really was healing. So the challenges that I faced with my students weren't, you know, just insolence and, you know, petulant brats. No, they really were master teachers. And they taught me to, I mean, I remember coming into a class of my first years, and sometimes they would ask me questions that I would literally look at them and go, I don't know the answer. And that was the first time in my life where I wouldn't have to improvise a lie. I could go, I don't know, but I can find out. And and if I asked them a question, they'd go, oh, we don't know, man, but we'll find out. And the excitement that I would have having to see them, because the curiosity that they had, the honesty they had, the difficulties that they had reflected my own difficulties and honesty and curiosity. And the common denominator between us was that we all showed up to try again. So as difficult as it was, my gosh, was it the best experience of my life. I love teaching. It made me go, geez, maybe this is what I'm called here to do. Because, you know, I remember my teachers and how they unlocked. I remember my first drama teacher, Elizabeth Hounsfield. When I was 8 years old, I went to her studio called the Woodcoat Studio at my primary school as an after-school activity. And I was a painfully shy kid who stuttered, but I will never forget Miss Hounsfield's incredible faith in me and how, you know, I would stutter through a poem. Old Billy Ricky Sat in a Well was the first poem I ever said in my life. And how she always made me feel like one day you're going to be one of the most brilliant things that's going to be in this acting world, and I will be there. And, you know, years later, maybe 3, 4 years or 5 years ago, you know, when I bumped into her, she's much older, but she still remembered, and people wouldn't believe her when she said this kid was painfully shy, but she had someone who believed in her. And that was the difference for me. And that's what teaching, the gift of teaching is. And so that was the gift that I was hopeful that I imparted in my students. And I think in your work as well, when you teach us how to take control of situations that have gotten out of control, that have wreaked havoc in our bodies, I'm sure there's a sense of relief and joy when you see your students get it, you know, so you get what I mean.
Yes. Oh, absolutely. It's the biggest gift. It's not about the money. It's not about anything, but watching people understand and change their own lives, you know. But what you just said is pure gold, because what it takes is having someone believe in you. That's really all it takes. As soon as somebody believes in you, something happens in the brain and you go, well, then I'll make it happen. I won't let them down. Yeah. And it's absolutely fascinating what people are capable of, whether it is overcoming a stutter or overcoming cancer. When you've changed that mindset, something magical happens, and that is such a gift. And what else you said, which stands out for me so much, is no matter where you are along the timeline, no matter what you've achieved, we're all in this together. You know, we're all here to teach each other, which is an incredible gift. You know, when you first day you came into my office and you said to me, Tembeka almost killed me, which was, it's like, what are you talking about? And you said, you were explaining what it takes to embody a character and mentally and emotionally to become that character. And if that character is toxic, which that character is, how it affects you physically. If that isn't the personification of the mind-body link, I don't know what is. So as a professional, how do you manage those two states, get into one state and physically, mentally, and emotionally step out of that state?
Yeah, stunning question, Nikki, because I used to never do that. And that's how I got myself into a mess. I thought that this unboundaried pouring of oneself into one's work and, you know, guts and gore going there, I thought that that's what made great acting, but it didn't actually. You know, great acting is being able to leave crumbs to return to yourself, like Hansel and Gretel, you know? And I didn't do that for myself. I didn't leave crumbs for myself. So Tembeka was the greatest opportunity of my life, but also the biggest challenge. And, you know, I will always be grateful for that character, because she then forced me to heal myself and take care of myself. And I'm grateful that I got an opportunity to revisit her as a healed me, because I can go into that space and I can have mechanisms such as, you know, my meditation, such as, you know, performing step in and step out, which is a tool that I've given my students as well, going, you don't have to be, you know, like Philip Seymour Hoffman, who poured himself into his characters, and we have this archive of beautiful work, but we don't have him anymore, because then he had to hustle and struggle with, you know, addiction. And we don't have brilliant actors like Heath Ledger anymore, who poured themselves into characters,
yes,
but didn't leave crumbs to be able to get out. So we have this beautiful arsenal resource of stories that they left us, but we don't have them. And so for me, therapy, mindfulness, stepping in, stepping out, being very deliberate and conscious about boundaries this time around in my life. You know, I think when I was younger, my boundaries were porous and negotiable. My no, if you asked very nicely, could maybe become a maybe. Now I am so deep in love. And by that, I don't mean as an external out of me, but love that I have for myself and for my work, that I can create boundaries around that. And I don't have to seem like, you know, a big cow about it. But I can go, yeah, no, I've reached capacity now, because I know what going over that means, and I don't want to go to Nikki's office sick again.
Yes.
So I know the consequences of not having boundaries. I know the consequences of not leaving crumbs for myself. I know the consequences of not taking care of my mental health, i.e. going to therapy, i.e. meditating. I know the consequences of not doing that. I mean, my partner, even when I get myself into a fritz sometimes, he'll literally look at me and he'll go, did you meditate today? That's how much he can even tell the difference between me having practiced mindfulness, whether it's meditating or yoga, and me not. Mm. There is a huge difference. So how I manage that this time around is so much better, because now I approach my work with joy. And of course, there are challenges in the workspace, and there are difficulties, and you know, we clash with people, and that's normal. But now I don't internalize it and make it my stuff. Maybe I can look back on it now and go, oh, maybe I'm triggering something in that person. Or I can ask myself, what is it about this person that's triggering me? But I don't feel like the locus of responsibility of joy and happiness is outside of me now. Now I know I can, and I know that my no is a healthy no, is a loving no, that my boundaries aren't porous, that I have non-negotiables in all facets, in all relationships, and that makes life much, much better than before. So I'm grateful for acting. Yeah, yeah.
So going back into your role now, because you've gone back into the show, what was it like that first day, stepping back into that character's shoes, having grown so much as a human being? I mean, you're a completely different person to the person you were 3 years ago. What did it feel like going back into that role?
It was scary. It was scary because it was just like, I don't know whether I can do this. Because remember, I was operating from a wounded space when I played Tembeka before.
Very much.
So I don't know if did the wounding make this character? Do I need to be wounded again? Geez, no, I don't want to do that. And I think, you know, I remember having a conversation with my partner, and he said to me, you know, just have joy this time around. Just see what happens if you play it from a place of absolute and utter joy. And you know, Nikki, it's like being in lockdown and eating everything and nonstop eating, and then you step into your favorite jeans and they still fit comfortably. That's how it felt like. So the anxiety of going, am I going to get into these jeans or not? Oh no, these jeans are my jeans. They've molded to my body. They remember me like I remember them. And the joy of eating and maybe getting a little bit more squishy in certain parts hasn't taken away from the comfort of these jeans. That's what it's
like. It hasn't taken the lights away. You know, I suppose the character evolves together with the actor. You know, as human beings evolve, the actor, the character would evolve together to an extent with you. So yeah. It's also perhaps an opportunity to see how that character can evolve. How much longer are you going to continue playing this role?
Not much longer. You know me well enough to know that I am constantly seeking adventure. I'm constantly curious about life. And and there's more adventure and more curiosity and more things to be done that await. And so this is why I encourage everyone to be brave. There's so much uncertainty and so much that we don't know. We need to hold on to what we know and let that be what makes us curious, you know. We need to be like little two-year-olds, and, you know, kids learn by going, why? And you tell them, yeah, because this is this, yeah, but why? And they go, okay, and this and that. And I love it when my nephew, you know, when he was littler, before he became a smart, sassy six-year-old. But if I tell him something and he'd go, why, Dubs? And I'd explain, and then he'd go, why? And then I'd continue explaining with the patience and love, knowing that he'll eventually get it. And when he got it, he'd go, okay, I can't wait to get to that point in my life where I look at my maker and I go, okay. And so to answer your question, it won't be much longer, but there'll come a time where I go, okay. So I'm still going, why?
Sure. And live theater, any sort of ambitions to do more stage rather than television?
You know, I do enjoy theater, but it is quite time and energy consuming. And so, you know, at the moment, again, we're reimagining ways of doing theater. A lot of theaters are live streaming performances. The National Arts, Festival is going to be completely live streamed this year. We're doing things differently. So let's talk after the lockdown. Let's talk after Corona, and maybe we'll go, people are going to start doing theaters from their lounges. You know, theater was never meant to be an elitist experience. It was meant to be shared. You know, this is how Gibson Kente and John Ganis and Athol Fugers of the world toured South Africa during the dark ages of our country. They found spaces. So maybe this is going to be an opportunity for me as an actor, as a theater maker, as a creative to find space and create. So we'll see. I can't give you a definite answer because I don't know. And that excites me.
Yes. Mm. Yes. So just to step aside, you know, it's always confounded me the amount of energy it takes and self-discipline to wake up every day and show up on set and work hours, sometimes into the night, and then have a very short period of time to sleep and recuperate and start all over again. But you have to bring 100% every single day. It's not like a desk job where you can sit behind your computer and you can basically fall asleep. How do you find, what do you have to do to look after yourself that you can really bring it to your audience 100% every day? Because that is something I don't think, you know, it's a gift. I think if you can get that right, it's an absolute gift.
Therapy. there's no other way to say it. I promise you, it's having a place to be able to, as much as you giving, it's an opportunity to refill your well. Mm-hmm. And, you know, in the Black community, therapy is incredibly taboo. There's a sense that an admission of I'm not okay is an admission of I'm a failure, I'm not coping. I don't know about other communities. I just know about my own. So this is why I grab every opportunity to share it to my community. Particularly the Black community, that therapy is the only way to deal with the woundings. You can only replenish your well by being able to identify the problems. And that's what therapy gives you, the tools to identify the problem, the tools to work through them. And so that's the only way I can do it. It's the only way. And my students would also ask me the same question. I'd go to therapy, go get to know yourself. Get to know yourself, because how are you going to leave crumbs for yourself to return to yourself after going to these characters if you don't know who you are? So for the longest time, I didn't know who I was. So so I could easily go and go into these dark spaces and then come home feeling guilty and heavy and dark and not quite know what's happening to me. Forgetting, oh no, that's not my stuff. That's person's stuff. She lost her kid and She had a miscarriage and had to pretend, you know, that's not me. I don't have that. I really am enjoying life. So therapy has helped me to be able to do those, to have those tools, to be able to give. It's not magic. It's really practical.
Sure, and that's it why is practical.
It needs to be accessible to everyone. It's a human right. Mm. It's not a privilege, you know?
Sure. And what is the rest of your self-care looking like these days? Are you eating well? Are you exercising? Are you sleeping well? What is the rest of your physical practical toolbox looking like?
It's amazing. And I'm grateful that I have the privilege to be able to isolate with someone that I am in a wonderful relationship with. Not many people have that. Some people are isolated with their abusers. I'm grateful for that. I truly, truly am. Oh. I'm grateful to be able to eat well and take time to eat good food. I'm grateful to be able to move. You know, I've downloaded a yoga app and you get to do my 20 minutes of yoga in the morning and in the evening. So I'm grateful for so many things, Nikki, because I know so many South Africans, so many people all over the world don't have access to that. So gratitude is a practice. I literally have a little gratitude jar, and every night I've been jotting down just 5 things that I'm grateful for that day. And I promise you, it makes a world of difference. Because you know, in the midst of this world crisis and not knowing and what this novel virus has brought into our world, it's great to be able to hold on to what I know for sure, that in this moment I'm loved, I'm nourished, I'm happy, I'm safe. Not many people can mention those 5 things.
Yes, absolutely. Well, my friend, it has been an absolute honor and pleasure speaking to you. It's been too long, and I am so happy that you have grown so much and are in a space where you are at peace. And you know, the sky's the limit. And even though we're in trying times, it seems that you have got your head screwed on in the right way more than most people I know. So well done. It is so reassuring and beautiful to hear, even with the Heidi Dars screeching our signature tune in the background.
It's a stunning soundtrack.
It's a stunning soundtrack. It's such a South African theme song. But well done. You've really pulled yourself up and you've done it all. You've had helpers and you've had tools and you've had, you know, but you did the work and no one can take that away from you. And the sky's the limit when you've got that attitude. Who knows where we're going to go from here, but it can only be into a good place.
Absolutely. And I just wanted to take this opportunity to say thank you to you. You know, we started as a professional relationship, and it's grown into a deep, deep friendship that has held space for me in incredibly dark times that both you and I know. So I'm deeply, deeply grateful for you for being my path mate. And let's just be curious next. Let's see where we go.
Yes.
We don't know.
I love
it. Oh, the places we will go.
Oh, I love it. Well, thank you so much. And yes, let's take the conversation further when something new arrives. But best of luck with what you're going to dive into next. I cannot wait to see what you come up with next.
Thank you, my love.
This episode has been sponsored by Jackson's Whole Food Market. If you would like to win a hamper full of delicious, healthy products, please go to the link in the show notes, which can be found at reinventhealth.co.za/podcast notes. Include your name and loyalty card number and stand a chance to win.